Welcome everyone to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a member of the 1012 Podcast Network. You can find all the great coverage of the Big 12 over at 1012network.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Let's get the show out there. Share this with your friends. Maybe you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. I'd also like to remind you, this podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. They are a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. Charlie Hustle wants you to be the best dressed fan this season, so be sure to check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel today and show off your school spirit all season long. With more than 30 schools to choose from, they've got you covered with all of your collegiate apparel needs, and you can get 15% off any non-sale item. That's right, any non-sale item by using the code 101215. That's TEN1215 at checkout. Shop today over at charliehustle.com. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who's struggling with Texas beating Houston because the Texans are beating Houston. Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
Well, you know, we're also in a world where we have to watch the Astros play the Rangers. We're recording this on Monday night. It's not looking good right now. The city of Houston has my heart, and unless they're playing UT. I don't know. Weird sports week. Rooting for and against Houston simultaneously. Was at this game. Weird one. Weird sequencing across the quarters. We'll talk about it. We'll dive into it. Pro Houston, but come on. Longhorns, we get victories somehow, inexplicably, and that's all that matters.
That is all that matters, whether it's a spot, whether it's a, I don't know. There's a lot of things we could talk about in this game, but Texas goes to Houston, jumps up 21-0, and then looks a lot like the 2021 Texas Longhorns let Houston come back and has to hold on to a narrow victory. The offense looked good. The defense, once again, looked a little questionable. Donovan Smith had himself another day against this Texas defense. It's becoming a trend, and I'm glad Texas doesn't have to play him again unless he transfers to an SEC school. But we've got all that for you today. Also, some great stuff in Down the 40. A lot of winning happened on the 40 acres this weekend. But let's start with that matchup at TDCEU, right? Five letters in that acronym for the Houston Stadium?
You nailed it.
But neither here nor there, Texas goes to Houston, to the university, and takes on the Cougars. They come away with a victory 31-24, a little bit tighter than we hoped for, I think we thought. And a lot of injuries piled up in that one. Quinn Ewers goes down with a reported AC joint separation in his throwing shoulder. Prior to that, 23-29 passing for 211 and two touchdowns on his 58 snaps. Was content to take what the defense was giving him and check down to Jonathan Brooks quite a bit for the to the tune of 8 receptions on 8 targets for 51 yards. Brooks, one yard shy of 100 yards, was pulled one play before Cedric Baxter's go-ahead touchdown. There's a lot to talk about in this game, Kyle, but I think when we start with the offense, it was almost the inverse of everything we've seen from Texas this year, where they, you know, they get out to this big lead, they jump out, the offense looks like it's clicking, and then something gets weird. You know, Houston put the lid on the defense, added a third safety, and Texas didn't really know how to respond. It was a new look from Houston. They weren't really prepared for it. Dana Holgorsen addressed that in his media appearance on Monday. But Texas couldn't really do that, and Steve Sarkisian seemed to be content with not running into a unloaded box. I'm not sure why, but that's another conversation for another day. But, you know, Texas came away with a win. When push comes to shove, it's a win, it's a win, it's a win. Texas is 6-1 in 7 games.
Yeah, I think, I believe it was Jalen Ford and Tavondre Sweat in a post-game press conference basically saying that they don't win that game 2 years ago, right? I think there's an acknowledgement and understanding, what's the age-old adage, win your clunkers, win the ugly games. This ended up being that. It's weird because it didn't start that way. It wasn't just a bad day all around, right? Texas scored on 3 of their first drives to take a 21-0 lead. The second touchdown, the deep ball to Worthy, was a top let's call it 3-2 throw of Quinn Ewers' career.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we've been hoping for multiple seasons, to see consistency in that. I mean, on that touchdown, right? Like, I'll just start here, right? So Texas opens up, scores on three of their first four, goes 21 up. U of H in their first 15 plays, 28 yards combined. Texas 28 or 21 points, U of H 28 yards, right? It looked like it was 21 skunk. You know,
I tweeted it. Give up the sticks. I think it's my fault.
I think, actually, Gerald, you jinxed us. You're a humble Teej in the making with your ability to jinx. But yeah, so none of anything that happened after should have counted, right? Because you give up the sticks, you're off. You're done. No, but that's video game jargon, of course. In the real world, you have to finish that game. And what I will say is that, for instance, that Worthy pass, right? One high safety. If he didn't immediately take two steps to get over to Worthy, he was never getting there. Worthy beat his man one-on-one touchdown. That was kind of the last time we saw, and Ewers saw the you know, ability to get one-on-one matchups downfield, right? They went to the flyover defense. Fans in the stands and I'm sure at home and on social media were complaining about the checkdowns, that that's what was being given. They decided we're going to take away, you know, the deep ball. Texas didn't really throw between the hashes at all this game. And, you know, to Houston's credit, it wasn't just on the offense and the defensive side of the ball, on the offensive side of the ball as well. They had a lot of yards after those first 15 plays. 51 plays, 369 yards coming after those first 15. It was a complete inversion of the game, and it, to me, 100% on both sides of the ball, felt like U of H said, okay, we need to change up the defense and make Texas beat us another way. They couldn't do that. They said on the U of H offensive side of the ball, well, we've been having some issues with Donovan Smith kind of getting confused in coverage, where Texas was showing one coverage, mixing coverage into another at the snap, seeing some confusion there. They couldn't run the ball. And they said, well, what if we just have our receivers basically read, and he just reads his receiver, and we'll spam mesh and crossing routes. And Texas never adjusted, right? U of H made all the adjustments in this game, and Texas never counter-adjusted. And that's a little bit worrying. That is a trend that, from the OU game 2 weeks in a row now with a bye week in the middle of it, is certainly a bit worrying.
The Houston receivers found some space underneath that zone and just sat in it, right? That's a lot of what they did on those mesh looks. And I think, I was cautiously optimistic before the year about the back end of this Texas defense, because you and I have talked a lot, and I've talked a lot about how frustrated I've been with some of the safety play for the last, 15 years since, Kenny Vaccaro was on campus. So I think there is something to be said for the injuries, right? Texas was very injured, somehow still very injured coming out of the bye week. You know, the bye week is supposed to be like your get healthy week. And I think Texas had a bunch of guys injured and got even more injured in this game. And so, that's going to be a thing, probably not coming up against BYU. We'll talk about that on Thursday, but, there are still some good offenses on the schedule. BYU's not really one of them again, but, and I'm probably going to, maybe I'll eat my words this time next week, but, Texas needs the young guys to step up in the back of this defense. The safeties, and not even the young guys, some of the older guys. Keaton Crawford looked like food for a lot of the one-on-one coverage. I think that's one of the big matchups that Houston liked to exploit. And I hate calling a guy out by name like that, but that's a couple of, maybe three games in a row where I think you've seen the back of his jersey in the wrong way. And so I think the safeties are still something to be concerned about. When we start talking about the offense, we have to talk about the running game offensively. Jonathan Brooks, for his trouble, 20 carries, 99 yards, 8 receptions, 51 yards. C.J. Baxter looked to be healthy for the first time since, game 1 or game 2. 6 carries, 46 yards, and a touchdown, including the 16-yard go-ahead touchdown. Jonathan Brooks set that one up, but Baxter punched it in. Worthy had his biggest game of the season, I think it feels like. 6 receptions, 92 yards, and a touchdown. At least he showed up quite a bit more. He was the leading receiver in this game. A.D. Mitchell had an off day, 1 reception on 3 targets, missed a couple of blocks as well. Offensive line struggled, but overall, the offense did enough to win, but I don't know if that's going to be enough moving forward. And especially as we talk about Quinn Ewers' injury, and I, you know, there was kind of a blessing in disguise. I think it's some of that where, you know, it sucks to lose Ewers, but Sark had to now spam the run a little bit. And so that worked out well, because that was what was working for them. And then we have to talk about the man, the myth, the legend, Savion Redd.
Yeah.
Just absolute spark plug and potentially the short yardage answer for Texas. I mean, you know, we've said it before. We don't have a ton of sources, but one that we talked to did say, like, Texas needs a bunch of kids that have the mentality of Savion Redd. And you saw it after the game with Jordan Winton and Trey Wisner, like, hyping him up after the game. Like, that is a guy who is a cornerstone type guy, leader in the making. And I'm excited to see that Wildcat set continue to be something that Texas can lean on when it needs to get, you know, one tough yard in the red zone, something it couldn't do 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. On the point of Savion Redd, I don't think a box score of 3 rushes for 9 yards has ever been less of an indicator of the impact someone's had on a game. Those three were all huge, right? The touchdown on a goal to go, right? Needed to execute and get the points and solve some of the red zone issues, and he did it on a fourth down. Crucially, he kind of bounced it out, and I said, oh no, is he going to get it? But then he just, of course he is. He's just going to will himself. They were all positive touches that you know, impacted the game when he got in there. Yeah, that work ethic, that you know, won't be beat mentality is something that you know, can at times be lacking. So incredible play there on your Xavier Worthy point in the first half. That may have been his best half of the game. He had just one catch for 7 yards in the second half. Again, with the flyover defense, he wasn't really one of the main targets in that second half, especially once Ewers went down with his injury. For Ewers' credit, again, the 23 for 29 passing, only 211 yards there, which, again, not terrible, but efficient. I would actually say, and we're hoping we get him back, you know, sooner rather than later, but the checkdowns in this one were a little bit of a progression in his game, right? There's been a lot of talk of, well, Quinn forces it, you know. There's been some talk of Quinn, you know, sometimes holds the ball a little long, and maybe at least one of the sacks was on him doing so, and maybe, you know, there may have been some shots downfield. But I also would rather a guy who doesn't want to give the ball up, you know, takes his shots when they're there for sure, but checks down if not and keeps the drives alive, right? This is, they felt comfortable. It was part of the game plan that they were going to go for it on fourth downs in this game. It's an area that Houston has struggled a bit, and Texas was, you know, aggressive and efficient in that regard. And so I think if you're going to be a team that's going for it, that's aggressive, that's doing that, keep the ball in your hands. I said it in my Podstradamus, the only way Houston wins this game is if they win the turnover battle. And luckily Texas will get to that, won that battle. But protected the ball in that way. And I think that's, even though it's not fun to watch when you have three guys running downfield and then it ends with a check down 5 seconds later. But, you know, it is the safe play, and it is on the offense to kind of figure out how to break that. But if that's what you have in front of you, that's what you take. A.D. Mitchell had a couple good blocks in the second half. I give him credit because we've given him some shtick for that. But some of his route running after the big catch just, you know, wasn't my favorite. Here's what I'll say, Gerald, and I won't spend too much more time about this. The offensive line could have been better. I think should have manhandled Houston's defensive line a little bit more. I am firmly in the camp that teams should be holding. U of H was the leading holds called on team in the Big 12, and I think it was like 3. Like, that's, I'm not even kidding. I think it was like 3 called on in the season. They were the worst in the Big 12. Refs aren't calling it. Like, they just simply aren't calling it. So you got to coach it up a little and say, all right, start holding. You know, Texas offensive line on pass plays, start holding. Keep your quarterback from getting hit there. And, you know, on run plays, I do want to see just a little bit more killer instinct. Create a little bit more, because we know what Baxter can do. We, of course, know what Brooks can do. So I'd like to see just a little bit more push on the Baxter touchdown. He did have the fresh legs, but also Christian Jones just killed. He had Sanders, who made a good block at tight end. Sanders, what would you say, 75, 80% fully fit? He looked better, but still not all the way there. But Jones goes inside, kills the four-eye to Spring that Baxter runs right behind, and then finds Paydirt. So, you know, they had some plays. Jake Majors gutted through this one. So happy to see him back. He's given his all there for the team. But, you know, there was still a little bit more that I wanted to see. If you're going to run the ball, which we'll talk in our BYU preview, is going to be key with a question mark at the quarterback going through the remainder of the season. I need the offensive line just to lean on some folks and to assert themselves.
DJ Campbell season incoming. If there's one thing that kid does well, it's run block. Defensively, Donovan Smith turns into Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, pick your favorite legendary quarterback. When he plays Texas, 378 on 32 of 46 and three touchdowns. That's the second 300-yard passing performance from against the Texas defense this year. His one turnover was a costly one. Houston was driving and about to score, and he just didn't see Michael Taffey over the top. And it looked like he just threw up one of those jackpot balls on the playground, and Big MT got it. Texas interior line was ridiculous. Like, the Texas defense, like, we knew Houston wasn't going to run the ball as much as we've seen, or as significantly as some other opponents have, but, like, I don't know if I've ever seen a team just straight blanked. And that, like, 14 yards is getting blanked on 19 rushes, which is absolutely ridiculous. They just looked good. The defense looked good early. And then Texas, you know, again, had no answer for Houston playing grass. And I think that's something to keep an eye on moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, it became very clear, right? We've always said on this podcast and any time we talk about football, is if you can make a team one-dimensional, you've really given your defense an you know, incredible advantage. And Texas 100% made U of H one-dimensional, right? Out of that 14 yards you talked about, Gerald, 12 of those came on one run. And I won't talk about which specific safety who had a tough game got ran over to give those. But, you know, they were dominant. The inside, Murphy, Sweat, and Collins before his injury were huge in this one. But once U of H said, okay, we can't run, so let's do the classic air raid, you know, compensation for no running game. Let's throw really short crossing routes and see if we can get yards after the catch, right? Simple enough. But a lot of times, because of the way they would spread Texas out, kind of with a bunch that would make the defensive end, you know, way out wide, four-man rush wasn't getting there. So we went with a fifth blitzer and just, you know, before a blitzer could get there, these short passes with a, you know, fifth or sometimes sixth man going after the quarterback. If it was man, you know, they just weren't keeping up with crossers. If it was zone, you know, they had pulled some of their sit down kind of hook defenders in the middle of the zone out, and it was just there. I mean, it was just wide open. I think I counted like at least four, if not five, consecutive times on third down where they converted with the same basic kind of mesh crossing, you know, concept and found their little slot receiver man jack over the middle, and we couldn't stop it. I mean, if we're in the stands calling it, you know, Kwiatkowski knows it's coming too, but what do you do to adjust to that? So again, that's where I say U of H made the adjustments and we didn't. Look, again, to go back to the holding, right? Like, we didn't get pressure in this game. There was, you know, a third down conversion where the one they had the big yards after the catch with a couple missed tackles. But that conversion, you know, Baron Sorrell was absolutely, dude had, you know, like a big brother, his head in a chokehold around his neck that went uncalled with the ref. Like, the craziest thing about that play, which has made its rounds on the internet, is you can see the ref's uniform standing right behind him. He has the best view in the house and wasn't calling it. So you knew it wasn't going to get called. Ethan Burke was getting a little frustrated, and I could see why. There was times he was getting held. He, I think, three or four times went to the ref after a play and said, what do I have to do to get this call? And they just weren't going to call it, right? But you have to find a way to get pressure or, you know, figure out your zone so it's so good so that, you know, Donovan Smith has nothing to look at, right? Like, Texas fans were frustrated. Why can they find space every time and we can't? Why? Let's do the defense they're doing. You know, there was some frustration I could feel all around from folks because it looked easy, right? Dana ran the same play. They played their greatest hits, and they played them well, right? If it wasn't for the interception, the forced fumble, which was a great play from Jalen Ford, and the huge hit from Taffy where you know across the middle of that exact play he came down and may have knocked the dude unconscious, but also knocked the ball out. If it wasn't for those specific winning plays, like they had it every time that they wanted it in the second half. Like I said, to the tune of 300 plus yards when we knew what two plays they were running.
Yeah, I mean, those two plays, I really applaud Dana for playing this game like he's playing Madden. Find two plays, spam them, let them work. Texas did get to the quarterback three times. Jalen Ford, Ethan Burke, Alfred Collins got there one time each. Special teams, nothing too wild except for Keelan Robinson trying to put the team on his back. You know, he had a couple of really incredible kick returns that set the offense up really well. Burt Auburn's fake.
Yeah.
I liked going for it. I honestly wanted Texas to go for it there. But I am never one to take the ball out of your offense's hands if you're trying to get yardage, right? And Sark talked about it on in the Monday press conference at Houston. The man who made the play against Burt Auburn is usually a guy who rushes to try to block the kick. And so that went against trend for U of H. And so Auburn made a guy miss, and I thought he almost got there. But yeah, I mean, you're averaging 5 yards a rush at that point. You need a couple of yards. Like, just line up and run it if you're going to go for it. Savion Red, you know, you have that Wildcat package that you believe in, so why not pull that?
It was fourth and six. It was fourth and six, which made it an even wilder call. I know Burt Auburn's got some moves, but,
it's just don't, like, if you're going to go for it, like, don't take the ball out of the offense's hands.
Agreed.
Ewers was dealing at that point, right? Like, let one of your running backs go for it. Try to lean on him. Do something. But don't do that. That's all I can say right there.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, give some props to Keelan Robinson. If you talk about the Savion Red, I think you equally got to give it to Keelan Robinson, who just, there was times when it looked like he was tackled on kick returns and he just kept like fighting and bear crawling through, you know, tacklers to give that, what we're talking about, that heart, that desire, that determination to make something happen. We need more guys playing like that. So shout out to Keelan there. But yeah, I mean, look, Gerald, at the end of the day, it was frustrating to watch. It was way more nerve-wracking than it should have been. 21 straight points to U of H is never a good thing. But the team responded, right? Like, this was a team that showed up, found a way to win, forced some turnovers, made just enough plays. Defensively, you know, got stood up strong when they needed to at the end, got the stop. Not a good game. Not a pretty game. Hopefully not a memorable game. I'd love to forget this game for many reasons. Injuries, all of it. But at the end of the day, you keep all of your goals on the table. You're 6-1. You are bowl eligible. You're you know, still exactly like you were heading in with the postseason goals in front of you. You just have to continue to execute.
And that's it, right? Texas controls its own fate. Win out, and you'll likely see yourself in the Big 12 championship game. Win that, and you'll probably have a legit argument for the college football playoff. But let's go one game at a time. Speaking of one game at a time, Prize Picks, Pod Stradamus. Kyle and I both go 1-1 on the week. Kyle had Quinn Ewers going for 300 and Texas winning the turnover battle, so he hits on that second one. I had Texas over 200 yards rushing and 2 sacks, so don't hit on the 200 yards rushing, but hit on the 2 sacks. 6-4.5 on the year. Kyle still leads, but we'll be back on Thursday with our BYU preview, getting you ready for that matchup as well. But now's the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40, number 6 volleyball in the first of its weird one game series, or I guess single games against Big 12 opponents, survives a 5-set match in front of 7,500 fans in Fort Worth, a record for their volleyball venue. Texas actually dropped the first one 14-25, then won the second 25-22, lost the third 21-25, and then won the last two 25-23 and 15-13. So tight all the way around to remain unbeaten in Big 12 play.
Yeah, this was a good test, right? It's I think like the third or fourth time this year that teams have set an attendance record when Texas came to town. That's what happens when you're the defending national champion, I guess. When you're Texas, when it's the last year in the conference, so I understand. They have a couple ranked games still on the schedule, but you know they're in a good spot. This was a tough, well fought out road win after starting so slow in the first one and in the second, which they came back to win. They showed some grit. It was back and forth, but they really, showed their class, I think. Your usual suspects were very good, and outside of hitting, zero or 0.025 in the first set, they came and did what they do. So great showing by TCU, who looked tough. After they dropped the first one, I got a little nervous, but they looked tough. And, credit to the Longhorns doing what they do.
I mean, they held on. TCU loves to beat Texas, but they don't do it very often at volleyball. Next up, they're back home at Gregoridge Mason, taking on the Baylor Bears on a Thursday, Friday, set up the 26th and 27th. Speaking of taking down TCU, the Natatoriums were hopping this weekend. Number 2 women swimming and diving and number 7 men swimming and diving both got wins over the Horned Frogs. The men, 192-99, the ladies, 192-99, the fellas, 195.5-100.5, so not quite as dominant by about a half point. The ladies edged out the men, but both absolutely blasted the Horned Frogs.
Yeah, and this was the men swimming, the reason they're number 7, they lost their opening one, if you'll remember, but this is their first match, their full team available, and they look dominant in it, so a good chance next week for both of our programs facing ranked opponents to kind of place where they're at for both in the national conversation, especially on the women's side.
Yeah, I mean, they're both got a shot to do something special again this year, and we'll see how the season shakes out. On the links, number 5 women's golf finished 8th at the Stanford Intercollegiate, which is hosted by Condoleezza Rice. Sophomore Angela Hugh led Texas, tied for 14th. Third, they were in third place after the first day, but couldn't keep up with that hot start.
Yeah, 11 ranked teams in this one. It seemed like they just kind of, the first day was under par, never had another day under par. It's a tough course. Everyone knows that Stanford course is tough. But a little bit disappointing, I think, for the team after a good start to not get a little bit higher finish. But 11 ranked teams in this one, they still had a good finish. Maybe they want it even better. But that's a young team. You're going to have a little bit of that this year.
Yeah, they're a young team. They're going to continue to be. But they'll be a contender. They've got a lot of young talent. That's the beauty of this team. And so I think this is the front end of what could be a long championship pedigree tale for this squad. On the men's side, 8 members. Oh, no, that's not golf. Keep it a country club. 8 members of the men's tennis team competed in the ITA Texas Regional Championships over the last week. Micah Braswell beat his brother, Jonah Braswell, in the semifinals on Monday. Today that we're recording, and they will have the title match on Tuesday. He'll take on Pedro Vives of TCU at 10 a.m., if that's your type of thing. On the diamond, we had a SEC matchup against Texas A&M. They played a 7-inning tie against the Aggies, 2-2. They last met for a regional in May. Texas took an early lead, but A&M tied it up later in the 7th.
Yeah, it's they have one more game in fall ball. They'll close it out with a 10-inning matchup against Texas State. But this was the big one that everyone was looking towards. Remember, this is a rematch of last year's NCAA regional. Won't talk about the outcome of that one, but it was a good game. It seemed like, I think Coach White said there was about 1,000 fans in the stands for a fall ball game, which is incredible. And they were bringing the energy like it was a postseason game. So this one meant something. A tie is interesting. Texas got after him early, and A&M got the tie right at the end. But early days for a team putting it all together. A&M's going to be a good team. These are both ranked teams. We'll see how good both of them are this season. But yes, you're right. Future SEC matchup.
Speaking of a future SEC matchup, orange and white game. Nope, they're just playing themselves. But if you are in the Austin area, you can check out the orange and white game at 6 o'clock on Tuesday, the day you're listening to this, and support the ladies. Vic Schaefer's team looking to have a big season. So you can get out there and support the women's basketball team to officially kick off the 2023-24 basketball year. And that brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So, Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
One of my favorite weeks of the year for the city of Austin in general is when Formula One comes to the circuit of America's. It's fun. I have a lot of friends who end up back in Austin, come in from out of town for it. It's people come from all over the world for it. But it's, you know, it's a fun event. Traffic can be tough if you're in Austin. But one tradition, the past, I don't know, 5 years or so of the Austin Formula One race is it certainly stands out. And I usually see UT Athletics post about it, but this year my wife actually beat the UT accounts when she sent me a video of our favorite racer, our favorite son, Austin's adopted Aussie, Daniel Ricciardo. Every year comes in and just knows how to work a home crowd like a good wrestling face. Like, he is throwing up the hook'em horn, showing up to Austin area restaurants, going to concerts, coming to campus. A couple years ago, his helmet was made to look like the UT football helmet. This year, it was a burnt orange kind of collage piece that was pretty exceptional. He rocked a Quinn Ewers jersey before the race. If you have a favorite Formula One racer, that's perfectly fine. It can be anyone except Max Verstappen, I kid. But if you already have a favorite, then Daniel Ricciardo should be your second. If you listen to this podcast and you're a fan of the Longhorns, he should be your second favorite because he's basically our adopted son. If you don't have a favorite, if you don't watch Formula One, then do me a favor. Just say, as of today, you're a fan of Daniel Ricciardo because he's just he's the most angelic creature in Formula One. He's the best personality. He's awesome. He loves the Longhorns. What more can you ask for? So honorary lifetime Longhorn, Daniel Ricciardo.
The only other thing we can ask for is some wins, right? I think we want to see him win some more. Because, you know, if he's going to rock that burnt orange, we got to have a championship pedigree. No, I kid. So I'm banging the drum this week on the legislative branch of the U.S. government. And this is not political. So if you're like, keep politics out of sports, I agree. Keep politics out of sports. So if you're not really following, we have some representatives and some senators who are making some very uneducated comments about NIL and wanting to push regulation through legislatively. You've got people on both sides of the aisle that really don't understand what NIL is or does. And they're talking about how it's hard to cheer for these young men when they're millionaires. What makes it different when they graduate and go out? How does it make it any different? But I think the thing that I really want to highlight here is just like, the NCAA is already inefficient enough, so bringing the U.S. government into it seems like just a recipe for further inefficiencies, and I'm not a big fan of it, but really, it's just such a myopic view of what NIL does and actually can be. You've got people that understand it, that are voices for it, that are talking about how this has been great for women's athletics because they're really able to maximize on their marketing appeal or their ability to do it in ways that other athletes can't. Or you've got people, they've got Texas tennis players who are able to offer their services as pros to receive some compensation for that. So it's not a violation of their amateurism, or they can do, you got players that are on Cameo that can kind of get some money in the door. And so legislating based on these edge cases of Caleb Williams or of all of these players that are getting these big, like if you legislate on edge cases, you end up with kind of the legislative situation we're currently in right now for a lot of other things. So just like keep Congress out of college football. That's really all I can say is like they don't understand how NIL valuations work. They don't understand the impact that it's had on non-revenue sports. They don't understand the impact of being able to have a guy like Jordan Whittington who can go get his teeth bleached for an Instagram post, right? It's not all Utah giving out trucks and Beats headsets by Caleb Williams. It's these smaller deals. It's, you know, being able to have the burnt ends group where the tight ends are getting together with Shaggy Bevo to get some money going. They're able to raise money for charities. They're able to, Arch Manning can give away $100,000 to charity because he sold a freaking autographed card, right? That's what NIL is all about. So again, Just keep Congress out of my college football.
Honestly, keep Congress out of my politics. When you talk about legislating edge cases, that could basically be the Congress 1999 to 2023 legislating edge cases. But I kid. Combine your two most inept friends, and that's the NCAA and the Texas elected officials. No, Gerald, you're 100% absolutely spot on. I don't know. I will say less because I can get myself in trouble. I'm going to keep politics out of our podcast, except in this case, to echo, keep politics out of college sports.
Something that I do not think is political, as we're recording, Texas soccer knocks off TCU 4-2. So we didn't have that in the Down the 40 because they were just running through that game. But Texas, big win over TCU. Texas continues to bolster itself for this postseason run. They move to 6-3-1 on the year. TCU falls to 6-2-1. Still need some help, but Texas closing in on solid seating in the NCAA and the Big 12 tournament. That's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on?
You can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carbon. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
Follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We'll be back on Thursday previewing Steve Sarkisian's alma mater, the BYU Cougars. Thank you so much for tuning in again this week. Until next time.
Welcome. Thank you for my dog Reagan making any appearances in the background.